Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor Podcast. Our guest today is Marine veteran Gino Garcia. Gino was born and raised in Pomona, California. At the age of 14, he joined the Devil Pups program, which inspired him to want to become a United States Marine. Gino initially wanted to enlist in the infantry. However, some of his veteran family members convinced him to choose an occupation that would make for a smoother transition back into the civilian world. So he picked supply. He conducted 3 deployments during his enlistment. After transitioning out of the Marine Corps, Gino founded Vibe Fitness Training Center, located in Rialto, California. If you enjoyed this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor and know anyone else who may, reach out to us on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email us at team@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, so Eugene, I go by Gino, but Eugene Garcia, United States Marine Corps, got out as a sergeant. I served from 2001 to 2006, and then my MOS was a supply Marine, 3051. Yeah, so born and raised in Pomona, California, which is, you know, not far from here, and grew up in a pretty warm household, supportive household, I would say. Definitely a community where it wasn't the worst community, but it definitely wasn't the best community. It was, you know, depending on which way you kind of put your attention towards. You can go in a bad direction or you can go in the right direction. And I was fortunate enough to be in a household where people kind of gave you some support along the way in regard to guidance, direction, encouragement. You know, when you messed up, kind of checked you. So I had that level of support in my household growing up with my dad and in my grandparents. And then, of course, I had some support with my uncles, my family. Just I always felt like I was guided the right direction. Even when I messed up, like I said, I was checked. But I was able to kind of comprehend like what was right from wrong in the life I wanted and what I didn't want. I was a kid in the backyard. You got to remember back growing up in the 80s, early 90s, we didn't have like the things we have today. So I was in the kid in the backyard all day playing, you know, playing a soldier. You know, I grew up watching all the good movies, the Arnolds, the Chucks, all those movies, of, you know, showing people getting some, the military lifestyle. That was just intrigued me as a kid. I had all the G.I. Joe figures. Top Gun, again, my dad was kind of involved in regard to like enjoying that genre as well. And so I was always intrigued with the military. That's why I share that. And so I remember as a kid knowing that I wanted to do something along those lines. And, you know, fast forward to when I was 14, that's when I realized I really wanted to become, at that time, I defined it as a Marine. And when I say defined, that's when I was exposed to the Marine Corps. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, growing up as a kid, man, that was just part of my life. And I even have pictures in Halloween, man, like getting G.I. Joe'd up. You know, I'm talking about the fake grenades, going to the surplus store. I had the little freaking MP5 blue, spray painted it black. I had the orange tip. So my point is I just had that natural gravitation towards the military. It just intrigued me. And I knew I wanted that to be a part of my life, even though, as a young kid, you didn't know exactly what that meant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Growing up, you start getting into like the middle school era, you're trying to discover yourself, right? So you start hanging around the wrong crowd. In my case, you know, I started gravitating towards back then what was like the gangbanger slash tagger scene type deal. Again, I'm trying to fit in, right? I think that shit is cool, but I don't know no better. But again, so I started noticing, I started getting in a little bit more trouble. You know, that's when I first started exploring with things that maybe I shouldn't have been dabbering into in the sixth grade. But again, it was me trying to find myself. And so when I could have stayed in that direction, you know, I had my dad that checked me. I had my uncles that pulled me in and said, hey, you know, this is what this is leading towards, you know, because whether they were involved with that lifestyle themselves, you know, they always wanted the best for me. And I had an uncle who, you know, he was a sheriff for LA Sheriff and he was part of the gang unit. So I remember him pulling me in and freaking being stern with me, showing me pictures of like all the shit that happens with, you know, that certain type of environment. In the decisions you make. And so again, having that level of support kind of checked me mentally and allowed me to kind of, you know, refocus myself, stay engaged with sports, which my dad was great at doing, making sure I was always being busy with sports.
What kind of things did you dabble with?
Yeah. So when I say dabble, what I'm saying is just getting in trouble, right? Trying to fit in, trying to impress those people that I thought, you know, were my friends at the time, whether it was fighting, whether it was, you know, tagging, whether it was, you know, smoking weed. You know, all that shit is things that I was doing, not because I wanted to do it. It was because I thought that's what I needed to do to fit in, to be a part of something that I didn't know exactly what that road led to if I continue that lifestyle. So, you know, my point with is that in those pivotal moments of my upbringing, if I really wanted to be a shithead for the rest of my life, I could have made those decisions that would have supported, you know, that lifestyle, and which would have ultimately led me to another place in my life. I probably wouldn't be here right now. Yeah. So like I was saying before, you know, just it always intrigued me. Right. So what had happened was I seen a couple of things, one being the Gulf War and then the Somalia conflict in I think it was 93 around that time. But one of those, the reason why I bring those two first events up is because I remember that's when, you know, they had reporters following the Marines or just military personnel. But ironically, that was the first time I had heard about Marines. And so one of the reporters I remember was following this squad around on patrol in Somalia. And she was basically outlining kind of like the ability that this young corporal had to lead a group of Marines through in a dangerous environment and how he was responsible for these lives of these Marines that they, you know, that they were tasked with a mission. And so that in itself opened my first mind or opened my mind up to like a Marine, right? Fast forward a little bit, again, around 14 years old, I went to this program called the Devil Pups. And for you guys that are watching, if you don't know what that is, it's basically like a Young Marines program that they hold every summer in Camp Pendleton. I was fortunate enough to go back and be an instructor in 2005, ironically. But, you know, I went to this program because of my uncle, who was the sheriff. He kind of exposed it to my dad. And we went out to one of the stations and had to do like a physical fitness tryout, basically. So one of the things that I recall with that program was that it was obviously the Marine Corps program. And so we got shipped off to Camp Pendleton for 10 days. And that was my first time I actually got to witness any type of military personnel, like in uniform, in that environment. And obviously being a Marine, like one of the first things I was intrigued with was just the way they conducted themselves, the way they handled business, their confidence, the way their mannerisms, just again, that level of confidence that I had never been exposed to. And again, because I had already an interest in the military, it just clicked for me. And so I was like, shit, I want to be that. Mm. You know, that was my first time actually seeing a Marine, being around Marines, and that level of confidence just intrigued me enough to be like, I want to make that part of my life. So at 14, I knew I wanted to go to the Marine Corps when my time was coming. I had a great recruiter experience, to be honest with you. I hear stories about people talking shit about their recruiter. And again, every case is different. I don't want to speak out of turn on that. But my recruiter, Sergeant Enriquez, later became Staff Sergeant. He guided me the right way. You know, straight shooter from guiding me about what I wanted to do. And you got to remember, I joined in 2001. This was before 9/11 had happened, right? So I went into high school already committed to going. I was already engaging with him. And so I told him what my intentions were, what I wanted to achieve. At first, I wanted to go in, be a grunt, right? I want to go to the infantry. But, and that was just because that's what I thought, you know, that's what I thought you had to do in going in the military. That's all I played around in the backyard. I didn't know about other MOSs, none of that shit. So anyway, my point is that after talking with my uncles and they were, you know, them being in the army, one of them was in the infantry as well, you know, just saying like, hey, if you're going to go in the military, if you're not going to make it a career, try to use it as a stepping stone, a part of your life, you know, set yourself up for after. And then on top of that, my dad too, you know, my dad, he guided me as well. You know, my dad wasn't a real emotional guy. And I say that because when I told him I was going to the Marine Corps and I was going to be going the infantry, dad's way of protecting me wasn't like, hey, son, think about this. Dad was like, he kind of guided me without showing that he was afraid for that, for that decision. And the way he said that was, you know, hey, if you're going to go to the military, try to also do set yourself up for after the fact. Right. I had told him, well, what about if I go as a tanker? And he's like, why do you want to be in a metal coffin for, you know, again, in retrospect, that was my dad's way of protecting me because he was, you know, he didn't want me to get hurt, understandably so. Mm-hmm. So again, just listening to my uncle, my dad, and then telling my recruiter what I wanted to achieve out of the Marine Corps. I remember him sitting down and saying, hey, what do you want to get from it? Well, I want to use it as a stepping stone for life. You know, what does that mean? Well, if there's an opportunity to go to college, you know, and we all know if you're in the military, in the Marine Corps specifically, you don't join to go to college, right? But you go to set yourself up. So I asked him, you know, what MOS has allowed me to kind of give me the most freedom where I can maybe potentially go to college. And again, this before 9/11 happened, it was like guided me with a list of jobs. So for me, it was the one that allowed me to do that was again supply. So that's why I chose it. And you know, that I thank my recruiter for that because he could have bullshitted me. He could have just filled, you know, whatever spots they needed to fill. I had a good GT score. So he guided me the right way. So I had a good recruiting experience, to be honest with you. Man, boot camp was a mental challenge. It was a good challenge though. You know, one of the things about me is I was always looking for a challenge, right? That was something that I actually enjoyed. I think that's why I enjoyed going to Devil Pup so much and going through that endeavor. And then going into high school, you know, I was an athlete as well. So I enjoyed the grind as well, doing the work. And then going into the military, specifically boot camp, Marine Corps boot camp at that, you hear all the stories, right? You hear it's the toughest boot camp in the world out of all the U.S. branches at least. And so you want to get some, right? And for a kid that likes challenge, that type of stuff intrigued me. So going into San Diego or MCRD San Diego, the physical requirements were challenging, but I liked that shit. You know, I liked to take on, you know, the endeavors that was going on. And for me, I naturally was able to kind of excel in physical fitness, physical activity. I never really had no issues with that. In fact, and I'm just saying this to kind of clear, you know, put it out there, you know, I was actually always, not actually, I always was first class PFTs, all right? I always had that. In boot camp, I had first class PFTs and I was one of the top dogs in the class. Yeah, man, so going into boot camp again, getting settled in, I remember coming off the bus, standing on the yellow footprints, MCRD, lost in the sauce, not knowing what's going on, but you're just like going with the flow, right? Shut your mouth, hurry up, move with purpose. And I remember that was the first time I realized like, fuck, you can actually fall asleep standing up because you're sleep deprived, right? You're going through processing. They're breaking your stuff down, making sure you didn't bring nothing into the depot. But just being really, really tired the first couple of days, realizing like, shit, you can fall asleep standing up. I remember doing that as you're waiting in line to get your hair cut for the first time. I'm just like, eyes are shut and I'm just standing there inching forward till it's my turn in the barber chair. But again, that's where the mental struggle came in, right? Yeah, so I remember getting picked up with a platoon 3021, Lima Company. And, you know, we hear all these things about Black Friday. We don't know what that is, especially again, going into boot camp, right? So again, just going with the flow. And I remember finally getting picked up. And, as we're sitting on the quarter deck, you know, cross leg, hands on your freaking knees there. I remember our drill instructors being introduced and then them going behind us. And funny story, man, before Black Friday really kicked off, I remember the drill instructors, as we were inching, moving around, scratching our faces, and we all know, all us Marines know, you know, when you're at a position of attention, when you're not supposed to be doing nothing except just paying attention, you know, you don't move. And I remember that one of the drill instructors, as we're looking forward, some recruit kept itching his face, and this recruit and the drill instructor underneath his breath, I remember him saying, "Keep fucking moving, motherfucker." You know, so he had like, that was the first time where I was like, damn, this is different, right? Then when we turned to Black Friday, right, when they freaking, whatever their call sign is, or the moment that where they freaking turned the dogs loose on us, I just remember these DIs just freaking going from zero to like 100 miles per hour in an instant, right? Getting up, thrashing, and when I say thrashing, throwing shit everywhere, freaking just making chaos. Think of controlled chaos. If you've never been in boot camp before, just beds are flying, racks are flying, racks are beds. So they're getting thrown off the bed. They want to get you confused. They grabbing your seat bag, throwing it somewhere where you lose it. And you're rushing around because they tell you to get online, which is basically get in front of a rack, right? And get in front of a bed and stand in a position of attention. But you're lost. You're confused. You don't know what's going on. And these DIs are like dogs just barking at you, hustling, you know, trying to get your ass to move online. Well, anyway, that was my first introduction of mental chaos, right? Understanding what that is. And I just remember all of us just being reactive to that situation. And just, again, that's when I realized, okay, everything you do has to be with speed, intensity, with purpose, and you need to shut your mouth, open your ears, pay attention to what's being said. And that was really my goal in boot camp, was just to keep my mouth shut, do the best I could, freaking learn to be a good teammate. And again, move with purpose and intention and just freaking go along with the ride. So as we're going through boot camp, you know, we've got it down, right? So as you kind of start understanding the routine, you know how it goes, you know, you get deeper into it. And towards the final phase of boot camp, at this point, you're indoctrinated, right? You understand what to do. So one of the funny stories that I have that I recall is being online at night for hygiene inspection. And for you guys that don't know, hygiene inspection is basically the drone structures have all the recruits get online and make sure that their fingernails are cut, make sure they don't have no dirt and shit building up, no fungus building up. Basically like a quick little medical check, if you would, hygiene check. Well, we're online like such, and I remember there was this recruit, his name was Johnson. And to paint a picture for you guys out there, Johnson, His name fit him. Johnson was Johnson, if you know what I mean. Yeah, so Johnson was Johnson. And so, again, you got to understand, we've got it down now. We're pretty much towards the end of boot camp. So we're not complacent, but we kind of are at this point. Well, anyway, we picked up this new drill instructor. His name was Staff Sergeant Roach, I remember. And Staff Sergeant Roach, again, was new to the drill field. So we were his first platoon. And you could tell the difference between a seasoned drill instructor and someone who's just coming in, right? And so I remember standing in hygiene formation before lights out. And one of the things that we dared Johnson to do was like, hey, Johnson, let's fuck with Staff Sergeant Roach. Well, we didn't say Staff Sergeant Drill Instructor, Staff Sergeant Roach. So what Johnson decided to do and what we kind of encouraged him to do was let Johnson show his Johnson, but do it in a way that made it fun. So we're wearing these short, what we call silkies. If you guys can picture this, we're wearing silkies and we're standing on line like such with just our shower shoes on, which are sandals, and our green t-shirt. And Johnson lets his Johnson hang out of his short silkies on the side right here. So if you guys could just, maybe some of you don't want to imagine, but basically Johnson has these short shorts on. And at the very end, just think of Johnson's Johnson sticking out. Well, anyway, Staff Sergeant Roach comes, pop, do the whole deal, right? Carries on, makes a right face, goes to Johnson, does a little pivot, turns left face, looks down at Johnson to look at his nails, doesn't say a fucking word. And we know why he's not saying a word, because one of the things with drill instructors is maintain bearing at all times, right? Don't show the recruits that you have a sensitive side or emotional side to you. So he keeps his head down the entire time, looks up at Johnson, doesn't say his traditional report or ask Johnson the questions that you go with hygiene inspection, trying to hold back his smirk on his face because he doesn't want to laugh, does a right face and just carries on outside of the squad bay, doesn't do the rest of the inspection. We know later that he wants to be freaking, he's probably dying in the squad bay hut. All of us are trying to hold our face because we know what Johnson just did and we know why the drill instructor decided not to do the rest of the inspection. So at lights out, we hit lights out and everybody just starts dying face down in the pillows. All you hear is chuckling inside the pillows because of what Johnson just did. So after getting out of boot camp or graduating boot camp, I should say, going to reporting to the fleet, I ended up with the first FSG at the time. I believe now it's called First Marine Logistics Group in Camp Pendleton. 22 areas specifically. Again, you're still brand new to the Marine Corps, right? You're still a boot. You know, you don't know what to expect and what's going on. You just do what you're told. When you're told, you be where you're supposed to be 15 minutes prior, all that type of shit. Well, anyway, I remember reporting into the 22 area for the first time and I'm like looking at like Marines and civvies, right? And I'm like, what the fuck? It feels like I'm back home. You know, you can tell who's from California by the way they dress. You can tell who's from like other parts of the country. So it's like a melting pot of all 18, 19, 20 year olds, 21 year olds. You definitely get, you know, messed with a little bit, right? And you know, you go in as a boot, you know, you don't know what's going on. So you do shit that maybe doesn't make sense. Like, hey, go ask for the keys for the Hummer type shit, right? But one of the things that I would say to that point is, what I actually appreciated about the Marine Corps, you know, then is like, hey, when you were wrong, like you got checked. And by check, I'll give you an example. I remember challenging one of the Lance Corporals. Again, I'm a PFC, right? And so Lance Corporal, PFC, same, you know, not the same rank, of course, but we kind of chew the same dirt, same police calls, duty, fucking all the shit jobs, you know, Lance Corporals, PFCs, privates, we get them. Well, anyway, my point is this. Is I remember kind of back-talking one of the Lance Corporals, right? And I challenged them to like a wrestling match. We used to go, when we have little differences, we go get some behind the building. And I remember that Lance Corporal Beard, there was two beards, it was a short beard. I remember him, man, me and him going at it, but that dude freaking slamming me on the ground because again, he was putting me in my place. Yeah, man, I think I was just talking shit. You know what I mean? As a PFC, you kind of get you report in after a couple weeks, you're like, oh yeah, I got this shit down. You know, and then you start kind of like getting a little bit of, you start poking your chest out a little bit, right? Trying to make your mark or whatever. But then you got these senior Marines who let you know like, hey, dude, you're still a boot. And this is how we do shit in the Marine Corps or in this case, this unit when you get out of line. So if you challenge them, you know, in this case, you know, I'm verbally, you know, confronting him with something or back talking him. I don't remember exactly. I don't want to bullshit on that. But my point is that he was like, hey, let's go to the back and handle this shit. Let's go get some, right? That's how we used to settle it. But him putting me in my place in that regard, let me know like, hey, man, you got to show that courtesy and respect aside from like the military rank structure. Right. Mm-hmm. It was just again, that was just the way it was. But, you know, that wasn't like hazing. That was just our culture, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were cool after that.
Did you go on deployment?
Yeah. So I had 3 pumps. So at this time, you know, I'm going, you know, things are going forward. Obviously in 2001, things start happening with, you know, people going to Afghanistan. And we hear all these things, but then in late 2000 or in the middle of 2002, this is when things start kicking up with Iraq, right? You know, President Bush's intention at that point was to kind of, you know, start doing whatever his plan was with the war on terrorism. And so this is when the thing about us leaving to Iraq was potentially starting to brew. And I remember the buildup for that. And that was our first deployment during the invasion in 2003. And the buildup for that was pretty straightforward in regard to like just all the focus became on that purpose, that mission, right, of what we were going to eventually go deploy to do, which is obviously support. And, you know, that was my first deployment in 2003. And then I had a second one in 2004. Well,
before you get to that, let's talk about the first one.
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk to me about what your experience was like. Obviously, this is a combat deployment, right? Going in 2003 is when you went?
Yeah. So basically, we fly out to Kuwait and we go through March Air Force Base. I remember basically going to these like little in the middle of the Kuwaiti desert where they dropped us off into like these basically berm set up cities. I don't even want to say city, but fucking basically big sand berms, right? And that was like our protection. And then we had a Camp Tarawa, Guadalcanal, all these like small little staging places, basically staging camps. And I remember the buildup to the invasion when we knew things were going to kick off was, you know, obviously we got the green light. So from Kuwait, we staged on the Iraqi border when we all convoyed out there. And I remember crossing the border for the first time and how surreal that was, because I remember being in the back of a 7-ton as we're pushing past the border, looking back, and I remember looking back and just seeing a shitload of vehicles, like just military vehicles, right? And I remember just thinking, like, holy, like, how surreal this was, this moment. I'm, at that time, 19 or 20 years old, going into being part of an invasion into Iraq. You know, this is like a moment where I didn't think I would ever be. Again, I wouldn't join the Marine Corps thinking that nothing was going to happen, again, before 9/11 happened. But now we're here in Iraq, pushing through the desert. And I remember that deployment being, it wasn't, you know, fearful, yes, because this is when we're in mop suits. So mop suits is a chemical suit that we're wearing, because the threat of a chemical attack from Saddam Hussein's army was a big thing. That was our biggest fear at that time. So everything that was going on, our biggest fear was whenever we hear explosions or something pop in the distance, the gas, that was the, you know, the universal signal. But I remember that deployment, but that was the deployment where I knew I was scared, but I felt like I was confident to come home. And basically the mission for us at that point is we went with on a battalion level, on a support level, and then we broke off into a company level, meaning I volunteered to be part of a service support company. And we pushed forward a little bit with division. And basically our job was to support division, be like the middleman between battalion support and company level support. And basically that mission was to support that division on in what they were doing, resupply them. And that deployment, though, was as scary as it was. It had its moments of, you know, seeing dead bodies, seeing how, you know, these guys got smoked, these guys being Iraqi soldiers in trenches face down. I remember, you know, getting off and going through the trenches that division had just went through and smoked a bunch of these guys, and just seeing like all that type of stuff. That was my first time being in that environment, of course, of war, and seeing what war looked like and seeing how ugly it is. And just remembering like, fuck, like, I can't believe I'm here right now, you know? And then from there, just, I remember digging in, because that was where we were going to be operating out of. That was our middle point, basically. I remember digging in and being cold as hell at night. I remember being in the back of a 7-ton sleeping while it wasn't your turn for fire watch, and just remember trying to stay warm. I remember, thinking like, damn, what am I doing here? I mean, all these things you go through your mind as a, you know, 19, 20 year old kid, wondering what's going on back home. And the war had pushed forward, and by forward, what I mean is that division was doing their thing. We heard updates about, you know, division getting to Baghdad and that happening, them taking down Baghdad. So I remember, again, as the war pushed on, and, you know, at this point, we pretty much were just waiting around for people to come through and need resupply, right? But these guys were so far ahead at this point that and things had pretty much, I don't want to say subsided, but this was in April already. And you could tell things had calmed down. You weren't hearing the artie go off in the distance anymore. You weren't hearing the things of war, right? Drum up like they were when we first crossed the border. So I remember just being there, settling in. And then every now and then we'd get like this, these officers coming through with like, I want to say they were like civil affairs officers type deal, asking for like a security detail to go with them on patrol to these like these cities in the south. Southern part of Iraq. And I volunteered for that because I had like, I was a SAW gunner. I had the SAW, carried the SAW during the invasion. And so the master sergeant top was like, hey, SAW and a couple of other Marines go with them. And I remember going through the south part of Iraq, driving through there and, you know, being a security detail, but getting to see the populace, the way they live, the environment was pretty cool as well. Again, there wasn't really a threat of danger at this point because the war was starting to die down. They, you know, they had already taken down the statue type deal, that historic moment that us Marines know about. But basically, yeah, just going through the patrolling a little bit, doing a little bit of patrols here and there, getting to see that part of Iraq was pretty obviously different, unique for me. I don't remember what cities they were specifically, but I just remember being able to see the populace was something I thought was pretty cool. Because again, as a non-infantry Marine, you think that you're not going to be called upon to do things like that. And we know it's not combat, right? We know it's not that. But at the same time, shit could pop off and you got at the very minimum got to be able to know how to conduct yourself. So I remember, and I say that because I remember thinking like, you got to know how to execute if shit does pop off. You're still in a war zone. The war's still going on, even though it doesn't feel like, you know, it's a massive threat. But you still, you know, got to know how to patrol. You still got to, again, know how to function outside of your MOS. And so those were things that I got to experience on the first deployment in 2003.
What was your second deployment like? Where'd you go?
Yeah, so second deployment, at this point, I'm kind of a little bit more seasoned in the Marine Corps. And one of the things I realized after the first deployment is like, hey, if you could volunteer to do something different outside of your MOS, just so that it kind of gets you away, that's what you want to do. At least that's what I wanted to do. So when the second buildup for the second deployment call came around, you know, they were asking, they meaning the command element was asking for volunteers for a security detail. And supposedly the intention was to be do convoy security, right? So this is when the insurgency had kicked in and basically a lot of the convoys were getting attacked. And so, you know, those elements were responsible for their own security. So we had these supposedly security detachments that were supposed to do convoy security. And I volunteered for that because I knew I didn't want to do my traditional MOS. Again, being exposed to 2003, knowing like if you volunteer, you can go do different things outside of your MOS, that type of stuff intrigued me. So I volunteered for that. And to be honest, my 2004 deployment was pretty straightforward. We didn't do convoy security after all. That got tasked out to some reserve infantry unit. I believe it was 3-2 or 324. I don't know the numericals on that, but something like that. They were doing the convoy security. And, we got tasked with base security at TQ, Camp Takedum, Iraq. Mm. Yeah. So that was pretty much 2004, straightforward. Other than, you know, insurgency dropping rockets, they couldn't shoot. So that you kind of got complacent with that. It wasn't honestly that deployment was more just laid back. Again, being a little bit more seasoned, you just go, you got it down pretty much. And so that one wasn't that too bad. The third one was what I would say was the most active and the one where I actually felt like, okay, this is where you could probably get hurt or not come home or something could happen to you, right? And the reason I say that is because at this point now, again, volunteering for another security element on this third deployment, this is the one where I actually took some time to write or record a video. I took a camcorder at this point. Record a video just kind of sending messages to my loved ones because I realized like, okay, this is a little different than 2003, 2004. And the reason why is because volunteering for the security element, I thought we were going to do base security again, right? But what had happened was is when we reported back into Camp Takedum, TQ, we ended up being a part of a security element for this, from what I understand was a counter-intel Marine. And from my understanding, his mission at that time when we were there was to disrupt or understand what was going on outside of the area of operation, which was Al-Habaniya. That area is where TQ was at. And so our mission or our task at that point was to be a security detachment for him when he needed to go outside the wire. And so this is when in 2006, you know, when shit's really at its peak, right?
Before you get into that, what What types of things did you say to your family? You recorded a video that you mentioned. What types of messages did you send back?
Yeah, so I at this point I'm married, so I recorded a message to my wife and just kind of, you know, letting her know my feelings for her, letting her know how much I cared for her and loved her. And again, letting her know, like, this, you know, this was my decision, and everything that I did, if something happened to me, it was me doing what I enjoy doing. I know that shit sounds cliche, but that was how it went. And then to my dad and to my sisters, my brother, and all my, you know, my loved ones, you know, just letting them know how much I cared for them and how much I loved them. And if they saw this, it was obviously because I got hurt. And just sharing my emotions with them about how I felt with them. I felt that was really important, because when I realized that we were going to be going outside the wire, and what was going on outside the wire between IEDs, between V-beds, between just the active insurgency that was outside the wire. And that's when I realized, like, I need to do something in case something happens to me, so that these people that I care about know how much I cared for them. And hopefully it will help them move on if something did happen to me. But so that's why I did that. Again, all three of my deployments, that was the one where I felt like some shit could happen to me, because I'm going to be outside the wire.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what ended up happening? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So with that, we ended up being a security element for this Marine. And one of our first missions that we had, and where I was like, holy shit, this has nothing to do with my MOS, was we were going to go to this village in the area, and he needed to go interrogate some potential, you know, insurgent activity and some individuals. And so what had happened was, the mission was we were going to go secure this village. And so I remember getting the warning order from our staff sergeant, just, you know, this is the mission. This is what the objective is. We're going to secure it. But in order to do that, you have to make sure, you know, you got to rehearse, right? You got to know the SOP, what's going to happen. You got to know whose jobs are what. And so in order to do that, you have to clear the village. And so I remember rehearsing for that mission and going through and rehearsing, like, our stack line, how we take down houses, how we clear houses. And I remember finally getting the day of our mission, and it was like 2 a.m. And I remember us waking up, checking our gear, making sure our gear was locked tight. And you got to remember, just kind of bring you guys in here a little bit, you know, aside from one of us, there was one grunt with us. All the rest of us were infantry Marines. And I say that because your MOS means shit at that time. Your job is to execute the mission, and you at the very minimum got to know how to handle yourself. So we had everything. We probably thought we were like the freaking special force pogues type of that time. I remember having MVGs and doing our gear checks, making sure our rifles were good to go. Again, we had what at that time was what we thought high speed, low drag type gear with our sappy plates. You know, we had the coveralls instead of our normal camis. So my point with it is that we woke up 2 a.m. The mission, we were going to be in the village at dawn. I remember going through, mounting the Humvees and driving at night. I wasn't a driver, but just MVGs. The driver had, you know, to navigate through the night. And we had some army guys with us. I think they were the Pathfinders. They were actually the leading us to the village. And I remember just kind of how eerie it felt, thinking like some shit could happen to you. You know, we were rehearsing how do you kick down doors, but everybody knows if you're on the front stack, which you're going to get dropped probably if there's a bad guy there, and maybe the second guy as well. So you hope that third Marine comes to the door, will drop him. But I remember being fearful because I was the first guy on the stack. And I remember rehearsing, thinking like, as we're rehearsing for the mission, thinking like, fuck, this can go bad really quick. And so when we get to the village, we pull up, we dismount. And I remember one of the Marines, he was Corporal DeRoach or DeLoach. He was carrying all the breaching gear. He wasn't in the best shape. And I remember him carrying the gear. And as we're hitting these houses, breaking, you know, the doors, I remember him saying, like, fuck, I need to get in shape. I'm a fat ass. Mm-hmm. And so I say that because even in the midst of, like, being focused, being intense, you know, being fearful at the same time, you still have funny moments. And so we clear this village out, gather up all the local populace in that village. And man, I just remember, again, thinking about surreal moments after things settle down, the adrenaline calms down and you're in the moment and you think like, fuck, I can't believe I just went through that and nothing happened to me. You know, and of course, you're happy that nothing happened to you, you know. And after that, just kind of taking it all in. And as we're sitting at this village at night, you know, we stay there overnight. We set up a perimeter for security, I remember, you know, being on fire watch with my with one of my best friends, Corporal Janelle. And I remember us sitting in the Humvee, and it's Iraq gets cold, at least the desert gets cold. And I remember us freezing our asses off, like just cold as hell, but tired as hell. We hadn't slept at this point. So we're taking 30-minute fire watch turns, right? But we're getting so tired. We're so tired at this point that I remember it was my turn to get on the 240. And I remember just trying, like starting to nod off. And I'm like, fuck, I can't. So I'm trying to do shit to get myself up. But you're cold, you're tired, you want to get warm. And Janeo was just knocked out. I remember kicking him saying, hey, I need you to stay up with me because I can't fucking stay awake. So us just reliving that moment now, ironically, I texted him the other day just talking about like, hey, bro, remember when we were on the gun and I couldn't stay awake and you were tired as well. And we were just like laughing about it now. But back then we were just like dying for sleep, trying to stay warm. Those were things that happened during that time that I relive. And that was one of the active things that we did out there. After that mission, part of our other mission was to be to secure a supply highway, MSR, Rhode Island. And the mission was simple, just disrupt the insurgents from planting IEDs on any of the roads there. And that was also part of the mission as well. But again, that was also the most active things that I did out of all three of those deployments. Mm.
Did you guys ever get hit with any of the IEDs or anything?
Yeah, so we our unit did not, or our squad didn't get hit. But I remember one of the things that our squad did do is they actually got the drop on a couple of insurgents that were planting IEDs. One of the things that I recall, and I wasn't there for this, but one of the Marines had to open up because what had happened was what we would do is on this MSR, we had about maybe like a 5-mile stretch where that was our area of operation to secure, right? And so what we would do is we wouldn't have the same pattern. We would go out at different times throughout the night, throughout the day, patrol it, make sure that we had different patterns. Well, one of our tactics was to set up in like hide sites over the hills because you had two hills and then you had the highway, or when I say hills, like sand dunes. And so what we would do is we would position our trucks to where what we thought people couldn't see us. So if an insurgent came and planted something, we would, you know, be able to, you know, take them or ambush them or whatever. But I remember one of the occasions when I wasn't there, they came back and told us one of the Marines or that crew had did that, and they actually caught an insurgent planting an IED. And then they chased him down and they opened up on him. And then he crashed into one of the berms and we brought him in. He wounded him. He shot him in the ass or something like that. And those are the type of things that we did, though, on that third deployment that really made me realize that old saying of like, you know, you sometimes the Marine Corps needs you in other places. That was one of those times where that had nothing to do with my MOS. And I was out there doing patrols, interacting with the local populace. Again, doing things that had nothing to do with my MOS. You know, when you have downtime on your deployment, I think one of the things I want to make clear is that not every deployment you're not always outside the wire, right? And so when you have downtime or when you're relaxing, you know, you have opportunity to do things. So you're lifting weights, you're working out. One of the things that we used to do on that third deployment is we would box. So what we would do is we set up like boxing matches. And this is like when Marines would want to get after each other, right? So you got a bunch of males just spent up with energy, right? Young males at that. So we have a lot of testosterone going. Everyone wants to show their skills. So one of the things that we would do is we would actually set up boxing matches between two big Qualcomms, like basically steel boxes, right? Shipping containers, where we would have like a pit. And man, we would go at it, dude. So I remember one of the activities that we would do, we would have boxing matches. It was normally the NCOs versus like the Lance Corporals PFCs. You know how it goes, man. Like we would get after each other. And yeah, so if someone had something that they wanted to go out with somebody and like, they had a beef with somebody, that's how we settled it, man. And I actually have that shit still on video.
Really?
Yeah, I found it going through all my stuff. I actually found one of the cassettes that we recorded some of our boxing matches. And I remember, man, we just had a good time, you know, and it was all good. You know, we used to get after each other and then laugh about it later on. But those were some of the things that we did as Marines that we relive, and we're like, man, you know, that
would... Did anybody ever get fucked up?
Oh, yeah, dude. I remember one of the Marines, Garnica, he actually went on to become part of the Marine Corps boxing team. That's how good this guy was. Dude has skills. Dude was out there laying dudes out. And I remember Garnica, him and Sergeant Flores were going at it. And I remember this Garnica had, you could tell this dude had boxed before. He just had skills, right? Where Sergeant Flores was getting some too, but not like comparing skills. You knew who was a boxer and who was more just, you know, street fighting type deal. And I remember him, you know, laying out Sergeant Flores, or not knocking him out, but just putting a good ass whooping to him, right? I remember us after that realizing like Garnica was the shit, and Garnica then went on to box a few other guys and he was always winning, right? But that was probably the most memorable as far as like who was doing what. Garnica was the shit. If he sees this, he knows what we're talking about. But yeah, man, other than that, we were getting after it, just going hand-to-hand combat with boxing gloves, dude, swinging, getting after it. No one really got knocked out. It was just all good fun. Got some lumps, got some bruises, but that is just part of the game.
And that was your third deployment, right?
Yeah, man, that was my final deployment. I got sent home early because I was EAS, and at that point I had volunteered for a fifth year. So I had extended my contract by a year to go to that last deployment. But by that time, man, I had pretty much wind down. I was pretty much done. I realized I get my time to get out because, you know, I wanted to go explore other parts of life in regard to like the next thing for my life. Remembering that why I joined the Marine Corps, and then realizing like, you know what, I'm good to go now, you know, I'm ready to move on with something different in my life.
Yeah. What was transitioning back into the civilian world like for you?
I mean, it was hard. Yeah, for sure. I think for us vets out there, male, female, doesn't matter. It's an adaption to a new environment, right? We're coming into a world where people don't move as fast, right? They don't get 50 things done in one day, right? And no knock on that. It's just we have to adjust to that lifestyle because we're so used to 100 miles per hour or you know, doing things with intention, with purpose, doing things, you know, again, just the way the military does it. So when you transition out, I remember it just being hard and difficult, especially coming off that third deployment, just kind of learning to talk to people was a challenge, you know, realizing like, hey, man, nobody really gives a shit about who you think you are. And nobody should, by the way, you know, respect, yes, but it goes both ways. And you have to adjust to a new environment. And that was a struggle, learning how to interact with, you know, civilian population. For the first time, again, you got to remember, 18-year-old kid, I grew up in the Marine Corps, that was a grow-up phase for me in the Marine Corps, so that's all I knew. And when you get out here, it's a totally different environment. So it was a little challenging, adjusting to the way of life. And again, I was a newly married guy. Now I'm around, you know, my wife every single day for the most part. That was an adjustment in itself. And just realizing, like, you have to adapt, but you struggle to adapt. And so just going through that transition, it took me about a year and a half to really get it to where I had like the, okay, I get it now. And, you know, you can't control certain things except the way you conduct yourself and the way you act or you respond. So learning those type of things was kind of as a process.
Yeah. What types of, things did you do to, mitigate like you being used to the Marine Corps lifestyle and environment, coming out, realizing that, you know, everybody out here is never on time, yeah. You know, and the standards aren't obviously as high for the majority of people as they are in the Marine Corps.
Right, right.
How did you deal with that?
Yeah, well, to be transparent, man, I still struggle with that part, right? Because I think standard, you can still maintain standards, right? And I still do. But I don't have to impose those on everybody. And that right there was and still will remain a struggle because I feel like, you know, the traditional courtesy of like, hey, be on time. You know, those are just what I view as just common courtesies as human beings, right? To respect people's time. So that's just one of the struggles that I will have. And I've learned to embrace it. But what I've learned to do is not be reactive to how it makes me feel. So, for example, if someone's late, you know, it used to pop me off and used to get me and I would let them know. In maybe a not so tactful way. Whereas now, if somebody's late and it imposes on like my schedule, for example, I will tactfully be able to respond. And I think that goes with part, not just transitioning into like the civilian world, but it also comes with maturity, right? Getting out as a 22, 23-year-old kid, you know, you're still not mature enough to understand like, hey, it's not about transition. It's just about being courteous as well and how you dialogue with people, you know? So I think that is, you know, part of it is learning to mature as well. Yeah. So now after getting out of the Marine Corps, going through a phase of trying to rediscover myself, figure out what the next step was, I had to revisit my 14-year-old self. And I say that because when I was 14, two things I knew for certain is that I wanted to be a Marine and that I was intrigued with business. I didn't know what type of business. I didn't even know what that meant. I just knew I was interested in understanding how do people who make money for themselves, how do they do it? Like that type of shit intrigued me. So when I, again, get down the Marine Corps, I had to rediscover that moment. I was like, yeah, you know what? I want to dab into business. And so the struggle became, okay, what do I do? What interests me? I thought I wanted to open up a sports bar at one point, decided I didn't want to go that route. I revisited the fact that, hey, I'm naturally, I gravitate towards fitness. Even in the Marine Corps, that was what I was, one of the things I was really good at, first class PFT type thing. And I enjoy leadership. So what I wanted to do was, how can I marry those two together? And that's how I got into the fitness industry or fitness business. And so now I started a company, well, not now, but in 2012, formally, I started a gym called the Vibe Fitness Training Facility. That's Vibe. And basically, I married the two because I'm able to lead people, whether it's my team now, who without them, this wouldn't even be possible, whether it is my team of members. I lead them to become better versions of themselves through what we do. It's not about teaching them to squat. Like that type of shit doesn't get me motivated. Like when I show somebody how to do an exercise, or that doesn't motivate. What motivates me is seeing them start from where they're at, hence boot camp, and then graduate into something where they realize their true full potential, hence Marine Corps boot camp graduation. So our facility is meant around supporting those individuals who just want to be healthier, stronger versions of themselves. It's not just physically, it's also mentally, you know, it's not just aesthetically, it's also mentally as well. So that's what our brand does. That's what we do. And the Marine Corps has definitely helped me, you know, understand leadership. It's put me in positions to be a leader. And that has in turn helped me lead a team of people who without them, again, none of this would be possible. So learning to be a good, effective leader. Do I make mistakes? Yeah, for sure. Have I made mistakes? Yeah, for sure. But we all do. That's part of growth. And I think reflecting back, you know, as a young Lance Corporal, we think we know everything, right? As, you know, oh, I would do it this way. But you don't know shit really until you are in a leadership position. And then you make decisions. And then you say, man, that decision is going to affect this area. Is it the best thing for the mission? Is it the best thing for the team? All those decisions come in part because of what I understood out of the Marine Corps, the type of leader I wanted to be when I was in a leadership position. And I wanted to make a positive impact in the lives of the people that I led. And so now that's what I do now. That's my mission. That's my purpose, is to just be a positive element in people's lives with the help of people around me, with the right people around me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's what we do every single day.
Nice, man. Well, we're getting ready to wrap it up. Any last words before we cut the tape?
Yeah, man. No, just, hey, first of all, I appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate your time as well. For you future Marines out there or any military branch that you guys decide to go to, I would just say, man, just have a plan. Don't go in there thinking that the Marine Corps or the military is just something to fall back on because you didn't plan. Because if you do that, you're going to have a shitty experience. You know, you're going to say that it was the worst, maybe one of the worst times of your life because you felt taken advantage of. And I say that because I've heard those stories from like people that are in my circle. But I would say to you guys is, man, if you have a plan, you know, leverage it to the best of its ability. There is a lot of value in the military. It's not always perfect. But again, at the end of the day, if you leverage it and you position yourself in the right way, you can definitely use it to set you up for success in the future and simplify.
Right on, man. Thanks for taking the seat, Gino.
All right, brother.
Simplify.
Thanks. Simplify.
I got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghost of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.